Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Christina Clack. I'm a member of Prairie, and also I'm serving on Prairie's board this year. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member or a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Reverend Jane Espenson. Today, we are thrilled to have Peggy Wireman. She will be presenting our service this morning. It is now my great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this morning. Peggy Wireman is a Wisconsin-based author and well-known for her social commentary on government, family, and the working class. Some of her well-known works include Alice in Bushland, a unique analysis of the Bush administration and the 2004 presidential election, and Connecting the Dots, Government, Community, and Family, which discusses shifting attitudes about family, business, and governmental relationship in today's America. And she does have some copies of that particular book out in the lobby for purchase today. Is that correct? Yeah, if you would like to do that. Like many of us, Peggy has been passionately involved in local events over the past few years, or past few weeks, and we are excited to experience her perspectives at Prairie today. Please join me in welcoming Peggy Wireman.
Thank you very, very much. Now what I would like you to do is to close your eyes. Now think of an elephant. Now, an elephant. Now, and if anybody can't hear me at any point, please raise your hand. Think of an elephant. Okay, now open your eyes. Okay, now close your eyes. Don't think of an elephant. Now open your eyes. Close your eyes. Think of an animal. How many of you saw a donkey? How many of you saw an elephant? That's framing.
Yeah.
Okay. So the purpose of today is to look at becoming better at framing and so we can become better informed citizens. And when you can reframe statements when you're talking to your friends and relatives in political action or writing letters to the editor or discussing issues in email, you can change the national discussion to something more sensible. Framing is a way of presenting the issue so you don't think about the real facts or consequences. You just accept the frame. Republicans are very good at it. Democrats are very bad. So what we will do three times today is I'm going to provide you some examples that have worked very well for Republicans. Then I'm going to talk about wages, not the middle income wages we're debating right now, but the even lower wages. But please bear with me, because this is relevant. For example, it's relevant in all of the discussions about the cuts for Medicaid, which is actually the private health insurance for a lot of private sector workers. Okay, and finally, I'm going to discuss the frames that are being used in the current controversy and have perhaps some ideas on how they might counter it. So when you listen today, listen to three questions. How are you going to reframe your ideas about American workers? How are you going to use the idea of reframing to examine every political statement? How will you hold your representatives accountable for moving past the frames to the reality of the pictures of people's everyday lives? The best example of reframing I know is the death tax. People don't like to think about death. They don't like to think of it, and they don't like taxes. So you combine the two, and you've got a really great frame. It's regardless of whether or not that money has ever, anybody's ever paid taxes on that money, whether or not it was all inherited from their own parents or whatever, it's irrelevant. Death is bad, taxes are bad, death taxes, estate taxes are bad. Another frame, death panels. When my mother lay dying in the hospital, the alarm bells ran off and people rushed in. I was not allowed to go in. I finally sent in a message which said, don't you dare put anything in her throat without talking to me. And finally somebody came out and very sheepishly said, well, we can't do anything because she's on a blue code. It was crucial that I, my sister, and the doctors all knew what her wishes were. What was the death panels? How many of you have been in this situation? Most of you will at some point or another. The question of the death panels, what it really was, is it would pay doctors to have the converse for the time it took to gently have the conversation with elderly people about what they wanted for their end of life care and to prepare the living will and other documents that they would need so they wouldn't necessarily have painful treatments that they didn't want, that weren't going to keep them alive for more than a couple of days, and avoid problems with their family and arguments within, and take the burden of that off of their family and avoid family squabbles. That's what it was all about. But what it came out with was killing grandmother. So how could you reframe this? Patient control over care when dying? Let grandmother decide? Anybody have any suggestions? But that's the job. Pardon?
Advanced directive, but people don't understand it.
Okay. So that's the job of reframing. And having been playing with this for a couple of months, it's not easy. Okay. Now let's try another thing. Entitlements. What comes to mind? That's a teenager saying they're invited, they deserve something that they really don't deserve. Okay. So it also collapses two conversations, and this is the insidious thing about reframe. You say entitlements, and you've collapsed Medicare and Medicaid. Now they're separate programs with totally different problems. Medicare is not broke, will not be broke for another 30 years, and even at that point, it would pay 70% of the benefits. So it's a totally separate kind of a problem. And only half the money goes in to pay for people who are retired. The other half goes into widows, orphans, and the disabled. And none of the discussion about reforming it has discussed, if you privatize it, what do we do with that half of the expense? There's no discussion about that at all because that's not the way it's been framed. Okay. I heard a statement on TV about the average worker making $50,000 a year. Note the use of average. Very tricky. Average includes CEO salaries. By contrast, the median, meaning half the people make more, half the people make less, I think I did that in reverse, but that's okay. It's about $30,000 a year.
Wow.
That's a significant difference. Another number thrown around is on the TV all the time, is the average family income of $50,000 a year. Great. What it doesn't say is this includes families with two workers and those receiving money from stock dividends that they inherited from their grandbrothers. Should we call this, instead of saying average family income of $50,000, should we say the two earner income of $50,000 plus the other stuff? So let's get back to that $30,000 median. This is less than the $35,200 needed to support a family of three at what is known as the self-sufficiency standard. The self-sufficiency standard would enable a family to have enough money for food, health care, rent, child care, and a car. But the car could be used only for go to work and one shopping trip a week. That's it. No Sunday drives in the country, no visits to friends or even relatives. The self-sufficiency budget includes no money for savings, education, or entertainment. There is no money for meals outside of the home. No Big Macs. The amount of the self-sufficiency standard is about twice that of the official poverty level. Now, the money for the standards for Badger Care, which the governor is considering cutting, is 135% of poverty, which is $15,000 for one and $25,000 for a family of three, which means it's $15,000 less than what that family would need to have this very modest standard of living. Okay? So that's part of what's up for grabs in this debate. So who makes this income that I'm talking about? Women caring, tending your child at the daycare center, the aide bathing your mother in the hospital, your office's security guard, the man stocking your groceries at the grocery store. They do not make a modest standard of living. In fact, 50% of the jobs that were projected by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to grow between 2008 and 2018, latest numbers available, fall into 33 categories, and the median, not the average, but the median wage of 23 of the 33 would not support a three-person family at the self-sufficiency level. So how could we frame such facts? Could we start calling the minimum wage the poverty wage? What are we talking about, a single person wage? People have tried talking about a living wage or family supporting jobs. Any of you guys have any other suggestions on this? Think.
Slave wage.
Slave wage, anything else? Okay, then there's another frame, starting at the bottom, because frames come in, they're not just one word, they can be whole kind of concepts. Starting at the bottom and working your way up. How many of you have seen the Walmart ads? Recently, okay. Well, the Walmart ads basically have been showing somebody who worked at Walmart and started at the lower level and is now a manager and is really thinks this is just wonderful. The ads are brilliant. They tap into this frame that in America, anybody can work their way up. It's one of our basic thoughts. In fact, in retail slot sales, there is only one supervisor job for every 20 slots. So the chances of working your way up are not actually all that great. About 5 years ago, I was involved in an effort to keep Walmart out of Monona, and I learned a lot about their pay, the environment, the treatment of workers, including women. But those ads made me think, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe they've changed. That's a really effective job of framing. Walmart ads also imply that sales clerks are young people taking their first-time jobs who probably are only supporting themselves. Most insidiously, they tap into the perception that those who haven't worked their way up, and I think we've been hearing a lot of this in the last few days, are lazy and unambitious. If they are poor, it's their own fault. So why should we use our tax money to help them? This frame ignores the fact that if all of the workers making less than a self-sufficiency wage, this is not even talking about the people who are at the square right now, if all of the workers making less than that self-sufficiency wage quit tomorrow, the country would shut down. There would be no stores, no child care centers, no hospitals. Before we stop, I would like you to close your eyes and look at the workers you know. Close your eyes, serve you food, see them serving you food, hear them greeting you at the store or the office, picture their age, feel, either young, old, middle, feel what it would be like to work in one of those jobs with little hope for ever advancement. Since doing this research, I now tip more. In airports, I always thank the cleaning women in the ladies' rooms. You would be amazed at the response that I get, because it really is nice. It really is nice when you're tired and hassled traveling to walk into a ladies' room at the airport and find it clean and pleasant. It really is, and I think they get it. And when I go to the Capitol, I thank the officers who are there. So another frame I want to talk about very briefly is the whole question of fair and balanced. On my way back from the Capitol last night, I heard on CNN Stan Chase say that there were thousands of people both for and against the bill at the Capitol. And then they quoted Walker saying that people in Wisconsin want the 14 to come back to work. That was the CNN radio broadcast at 5 o'clock last night. So I have heard at the Grassroots Festival somebody from Media Matters talk about how important it is to call the papers and call the radios on what they're doing. So I spent about 10 minutes trying to figure out how to get hold of them. And eventually on the internet, I finally said something that said news tips. And I actually called them, and I actually got to a real live person and explained that this was totally inaccurate reporting. And, you know, he kind of said, yeah, I got it, you know, and hopefully he would pass it on or not. But if everybody in this room calls that tip line and this afternoon and complained, the message would definitely get through that San Chase should take a better job, who's actually in Atlanta, I think, because I tried to find him. So, but this is really important. I did this with the State Journal the other day in terms of the way they had the picture they had on their front page about a week ago. So this is something that doesn't take too long to do, particularly if you've got a computer expert in your family that can find the right place to call, and it's very useful. So this brings us back, again, to this week's issues. Walker framed the issue. How do you think Walker framed the issue?
Pro Walker.
Good, I hadn't thought of that one. How else?
We're broke.
Okay. Anti-government, anti-Madison, anti-eggheads, anti-intellectual, probably also those students who rebelled in the 60s. You've also got that. And all of the ones that, irresponsible students. So I'm going to try a couple of frames out for you, and you guys are going to think of some more. Wisconsin values its schools, libraries, and parks, and honors the workers who have made them great. Good, bad, beat it. Wisconsin's system of collective bargaining has helped make Wisconsin a great place to live, with workers and local governments working together to negotiate peaceful solutions to problems and disagreements. That's why the organizations of school administrators, county and local governments do not want to lose collective bargaining. Arguing against the frame with facts, which is what people like me do, won't get you anywhere.
That's right.
Now, facts are I happen to believe facts are still useful. I worked for the government for a long time. I worked up in Capitol in the U.S. Senate and House for a while. And other things being equal, facts actually do matter. But the frames matter more. Don't argue with facts with the frame. Change the frame and then present your facts. That will perhaps be more useful. Okay, church. Another one. Churches, nonprofits, and unions provide a means for people to join together to effectively express their views to big corporations and government. Only unions allow ordinary people to sit at the table with big corporations and organizations as equals. another one, as a nurse, I heard a nurse say yesterday at the rally, do you really want a nurse that has been forced to work 16 hours straight putting your catheter in and out? And finally, how do we define collective bargaining, which seems to be part of the problem, and what does collective action mean? Corporate owners can't move the Green Bay Packers to another state only because the Packers are collectively owned by citizens. That's the power of collective action. Other small cities lost their teams because the owners could and did sell them on the private market to other cities. Before taking questions, I would like you to turn to your neighbor and answer one of the questions that we began with. Find them, I'll give you the questions. How are you going to reframe your ideas about the American workers? How are you going to use the reframing to examine every political statement? I think start with, let's keep the American workers one. What reframes can you come up with? What I'll do is I'll give you about a minute each. The person with the shortest hair, turn to your right. The person who has the shortest hair, go first. And after a minute, I'll tell you to switch. Okay? Start. And now we have time for questions. Actually, I'd like to make a comment. The minimum wage for waitresses is $2.35 an hour. The rest is tips. Thank you. One, you guys are wonderful. I wish that I had been able to write down some of these reframes. Two, if anybody is good at Twitter, would you please see me afterwards and also get some of these Twitters out? And three, I have out there, in addition to the book, which has a lot of useful data and analysis in it, quite frankly. In addition to that, though, I do have a yellow sheet to sign up if you want to get emails from me, a thing to take to if you want to get on my blog, and several bits of handout about the book, but also I took quotations from the book. The book talks about a lot of other stuff too, but about this union issue, and then some other quotations and facts which you may find useful to think about and share with people. And if you look at something I've got out there and you know another good way to reframe it, or somebody take a yellow sheet and write down all your great reframes that you gave me, please share them with me. Thank you.
Thank you. I wish we had another hour, but we don't. So thank you so much, Peggy.